Hey, it's Rich. Have you ever been on a dating app? One study found that nearly 40% of relationships begin on one. If you're looking for love, it sounds like a good place to start, doesn't it? And the marketing for dating apps, well, it's slick. In fact, Tinder's trademark tagline is swipe right. They make it sound so simple. And of course, the testimonials, well, they're even more convincing. Head over to Bumble's website, and you can read about amazing success stories that begin on the app. Have a great story of your own? There's a place to submit that. Now, is it always rainbows and unicorns? Well, over the years, I've had my share of dating app experiences, and from my own firsthand accounts, I can tell you one thing for sure. Bad actors, they're alive and well. In fact, when I was on dating apps, there probably wasn't a day of swiping that passed without me encountering at least one catfisher. At this point, I've heard most of the scams, and the end game is almost always the same: to trick you into parting with some of your money. Oh, the number of times I had a scheduled video call postponed. The excuses were always similar. My webcam is broken. I'm working overtime. And my favorite, an urgent matter has arisen and requires my full attention. Today, social engineering attacks are a reality of personal life and corporate security. You're about to hear from a former U.S. Army intelligence officer. He used to employ social engineering techniques to collect information from informants and detainees. Now, while he was a good actor, the tactics he leveraged are the same ones you might encounter from a bad actor. This episode is about raising awareness and keeping you on your toes. Yes, generally most people are good. No need to become jaded. But it takes just one to ruin your day. Be careful on those dating apps. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app. And Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating privacy solutions into their software. And please check out our newest offering, MySudo VPN, now available in the App Store and Play Store, a consumer VPN that is actually private. Reed, welcome to the podcast.
Oh man, I'm so glad to be here. And so nervous at the same time.
No, please. You've got some amazing stories. We're probably going to run out of time, I'm sure, doing this.
We're gonna find out.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing here right now here at Anonymy?
So at Anonymy, what I do is that I work in sales development. I've been in sales for, you know, when we'll probably go into this, but I've been doing sales since I stopped working for the military in 2021. I've been in some shape or form or fashion, continued to work in a sales capacity. And all that stems from my previous experience from when I was in the Army. And I came here in June of this year and just continued to work and continue to try to help the company scale and kind of build, I don't know, kind of build a lot of the awareness of how we can, you know, how we can continue to protect ourselves. And protect our personally identifiable information, stuff like that.
And coming, I guess, from a military background, obviously, privacy and security is definitely something probably on the top of your mind, I would imagine.
Well, it is, and that mostly stems back to when I first got in. I ended up joining the Army National Guard back in 2006, and one of the reasons that I wanted to get into it was, you know, the initial reasons, right? You want to be able to pay for school, or you want to be able to have these different opportunities. Well, I found that I could learn an additional language, and that was really appealing to me. And so I ended up joining with the intent of being able to, hey, I'm going to join. I'm going to go, you know, after I get done from training, I'm going to come back. I'm going to finish school and do everything else. And then it just carried me away for about 6 years. And then I came back and finally finished my degree.
And at what point did you become interested, I guess, in the area of intelligence?
Oh, that was back in the day. That was back in the day when I was like a kid. I'll be honest. one of the things that I wanted to do is that I wanted to be a, you know, a quote unquote spy. You know, you watch all like the spy movies and everything else as a kid, and you know, you loved the whole idea of intelligence, and I just kind of, you know, fell away from it for a little bit, and then I ended up coming back to it when I was going to college, and I saw that it was an option to be able to do that. And one of the job descriptions that was there was a human intelligence collector. And so that was one of the things that I jumped into. And when I heard that I could learn an additional language on top of it, I thought, absolutely, there's no question. This is what I want to do.
And there's definitely different, I guess, career paths within intelligence, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. What would some of those be?
You've got different jobs. I mean, you could go and find these like online or anything like that, but there's, you know, you've got the job of like analysts. You've got the job of, mostly that's what you're going to hear is probably like an analyst position. A lot of times what you'll do is that you'll run into, you hear about some people getting into, you know, signal intelligence. You hear some people getting into, other forms, counterintelligence and things like that. But mostly they just kind of bring it all together because they all are interlinked together and have to work together.
Yeah, we interviewed somebody who is she does protective intelligence and signals intelligence was what she did in the Army, I think. Mm-hmm. So that was a fascinating story. So given that you kind of got that smooth voice and you're kind of hypnotic, oh, I mean, that probably comes in handy when you're doing the...
when I'm doing the sales thing, get people on the phone, get really gravelly, talk about my past. No, it's it's nothing like that. It's more of just being able to connect with people. And that's one of the real things that I loved about being a human intelligence collector is that you learn a lot of those skills about being able to move past that motivation to resist. A lot of times when people hear about, you know, interrogation, you know, they often think that it's a lot of, you know, that bright light, that good cop, bad cop, you know. You know, you take an example from like previous shows, you know, they take a phone book to the face or something like crazy, stupid like that. And it's, you know, it has nothing to do with that. It's about being able to build relationships. And that's one of the reasons why I continue to stay in sales is because I love being able to build relationships with people. And the great thing about it is that it's being able to find common ground and being able to, that's probably the best part is finding that common ground and then moving past it and being able to say, let's find a solution for both of us where we can both be able to benefit.
How long does it take to go through the interrogation training in the military typically?
It will take probably anywhere about 5 months. If you go through, you know, you go through the active duty component or something like that, active duty Army, it takes about 5 months.
So what was it like, I guess, when you applied this for the first time?
Applying it for the first time is quite interesting because what you'll find is that when you go through and when you conduct, you know, you initially start a conversation with somebody, oftentimes, especially in a scenario, if you have somebody that's sitting across the desk, that is usually a detainee in many cases, what will happen is that you have to start off being able to build rapport with that person. And you'll find that initially it's very difficult. They're very aggressive. They're going to be, you know, it's sometimes they're going to be a little bit more like agreeable and they may want to work with you, but you'll find that those times are sometimes rare. And, but what you'll find and is that most of those conversations that you have are very similar to what you have in a regular conversation. But what you're doing is that you're learning those regular skills that you have. You know, you probably hear it before, like somebody's got a gift of the gab and somebody's very smooth and charismatic. And you see a lot of salespeople do that. And most salespeople that I know would be outstanding collectors. And the reason that I say that is because they're able to build rapport very quickly, and they're very likable in nature. They are very concise. They want to hear about that person. They want to get them talking. And what you find is that many of those skills that you see out in the real world, oh my gosh, like when you actually realize like, hey, I've been doing this my entire life, and now I'm actually going to use this to be able to save other people's lives. That was the biggest key. That was the biggest switch that turned on for me is that when I was sitting there and people were saying, oh yeah, you know, they were rolling through like, hey, this is how you do an approach. This is how you do a strategy to be able to build rapport with that person. When you do that and when you start to realize like, oh my gosh, I've had conversations like this all the time. And they literally say to you, yes, that's absolutely true, this is how you're going to be able to save other soldiers, is by doing these things. And it just builds that sense of urgency, and it builds that sense of just duty that you want to be able to go out there and use this to be able to help others.
I think when I look back at it, some of the social engineering tactics that are out there, there's basically, you've got one version, which is the online version. So you get a phishing attack. Somebody sends you a text message and tells you your account has been hacked, and they're just trying to get information out of you so they can crack into your financial, you know, records and so forth. But then there's the other one, which is the offline version. We interviewed, I think his name is Robert Kerbeck, and some consider him like the best corporate spy that ever lived, right? And when we interviewed him, I think three approaches that he used that seemed very effective. One was the authority figure, mm-hmm. where he pretended to be somebody two levels above whoever he was talking to on the phone, in maybe an office halfway around the world. And he would use that to his advantage to say, I need this and you have better do this. If you know what's good for you, this is your career. And that would work. Two other techniques. One was a sense of urgency, right? We're running out of time. I need this information. I've got three people above me that are screaming at me. Got to help me. And then the third approach was, like you mentioned, he's trying to pretend to identify with you. Like, I know how you feel. I understand that you're in a tough position. So building that rapport in a very quick manner. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how effective he was at obtaining very sensitive information about companies just through the phone.
Mm. Well, and I think he's got it right. Let's take it back a little bit. So as far as like the different approach strategies that you have as a collector, there are 17 different approach strategies that you do. Right. And the way that we learned how to do this is that you do a combination of these different things. So a lot of times it's going to be, you know, the emotional approaches are always going to be the best. And when you're using an emotional approach, it's going to be that, you know, a lot of that fear, sometimes of futility, you might be able to, you know, cause them to be able to get that sense of urgency or that sense of fear a lot of times, because that's going to be that motivator that's going to make people kind of, you know, not ask any questions at all. But when you bring up that sense of urgency combined with an authoritative figure where you put on that persona of, hey, I am the manager, the director level, and I'm reaching down to you, and all you need to have is a couple of pieces of information that qualify you. And so if you're using the same verbiage that an organization is using in their day-to-day, and you're able to say like, hey, I am the director level of product management, you need to be able to listen to me right now, or like IT or whatever it would be. If you use that verbiage, it's a lot easier to be able to kind of break past that initial motivation or that motivation to resist you. You'll find that in sales, it's the same thing, is that if you're going in and you're talking somebody's language, they're going to be more apt to talk to you. You know, if you walk in and essentially just use things that aren't familiar, you know, you take, for instance, if you were to go in, if you were to talk to somebody in a credit union, for instance, right? And if you go in and start talking about their customers, they automatically know that you're an imposter. They automatically know like, hey, well, we don't consider them customers. We consider them members. And so that's one of the things that you have to go in and know what that verbiage is before you ever walk in. That's one of the reasons why it's incredibly important to do your homework before you do any of this. And all of the good people that are able to, that are sitting on red teams and that are going out there and doing this kind of penetration testing at the human level, they've done countless hours of homework beforehand.
Now, obviously, you were assuming the position of a good actor, not a bad actor.
Right.
What were some cues that you would look for as you are conducting your interrogation where you started to say to yourself, oh, it's working? Were there certain cues you were looking for?
It's a lot of times it's going to be in their body language, which is hard, right? Especially if you're trying to talk somebody on the phone, which is why, you know, when you're using the example of this previous red teamer, that's difficult to do, right? Especially at his angle. But that's one of the things that we look for that. A lot of times what you'll see is that you'll see a nod. You'll see when you start asking those questions, they'll start giving a few more answers. they'll elaborate just a little bit more and give you just a little bit more detail. And then at that point, that's how you know. For instance, if you're going to be working with somebody and you're utilizing a what we call a love of comrades approach, you would be sitting down and they would be talking and telling you about some of their comrades. And they would be talking a little bit about like, well, I'm worried about them and I'm worried about what they're doing because I know about this person and their family situation and I need to be able to help them. And at that point, it's all about being able to say, you're absolutely right. I commend you on being able to want to be able to help that person. You have to understand, I want to be able to help that person too. And so why don't we continue to work towards a solution where both of us can be able to be and find that solution that we need to move forward and be able to get this information that we need to get into the right hands or whatever that situation may apply.
When you're interrogating somebody, is it a multi-step process? So are you able to extract all the information you need in one session? Does it have to happen over multiple sessions?
And so this is the experience that most people have are going to be months of rapport. It takes a very, very long time to be able to build rapport normally with somebody. Unless there is a scenario where somebody had come in beforehand and been able to build a lot of rapport and then they do a warm handover to you. It's, if you're coming in somebody just fresh off the street, there's a lot of walls that are built up that you have to move past.
What do you typically call the person that you're interrogating? Is it the subject? Is it?
Detainee is normally the individual that you're dealing with. In the case that somebody is coming in and wanting to talk to you, that's going to be, you're going to hear like the word like source. In the case of, when you need to be able to get a confession, like when they're in an investigation, that's going to be a subject.
There's so many videos online of former CIA ops. Of course, who's ever a former CIA op, right?
Right.
But there's a lot of videos in that area, FBI, former FBI interrogators who will talk about the signs to look for when someone's not being truthful. Mm-hmm. What did you typically notice? What were you looking for?
So the thing that we normally did is that we normally kept an eye out for short, concise answers. You take a look at it. Let's use an example, right? An example is you go out there, and I like to use the example of when you're going out, when you're dating, if you're single, right? When you're going out and you're trying to talk to your quote unquote, your target, right? You got your person that you're going for, right?
Everybody's putting on their best face.
That's
too, right.
Everybody is. Everybody's putting on their best face and everything. But you can tell right off the bat when you'd start talking to that person and they're being jovial and they're talking back and they're being quippy or they're a little bit of banter. But you know, when they start giving short answers and they're being concise and they're being almost curt, that you're like, oh man, this is going in a bad direction. Like, I better stop. That's it. Abort mission, right? It's similar when you're dealing with something like that. Now, what we usually did is that we usually armed ourselves with a lot of information beforehand. And so there were certain, there were certain documents that we would make sure that we read up on every day to make sure that we understood the comings and goings of all the information that was coming into the area. And I'm referring back to when I was deployed in the Middle East. And when I was there, what we would do is that we'd have those reports that we'd be reading up on. And so we kind of knew what was happening in the area. And then we would meet with somebody that would want to come in and talk to us. And we'd start going through the entire process. And as we're speaking to them, we would notice that a lot of the stuff that they're saying didn't add up. And so at that point, you kind of knowing what is going on, and then they come in and they're trying to kind of send out this almost like this kind of diverging type of campaign for you and trying to see what you're going to do. At that point, you have to be able to say, well, let's ask a couple of questions, right? Let's go through and, okay, tell me about this and tell me about this. And so you start asking some of those, almost those questions that are going to force them to be able to either tell you the truth or tell you the lie and to determine what their credibility is for that situation. And in many cases, most cases, people are trying to tell the truth when they're coming in and talking to you willingly. But individuals that are coming in and they're trying to lead you in a different direction, and it's sometimes the first time you've spoken to them, at that point, you're kind of like, hey, you call them out. And that's the first thing that they tell you to do at the schoolhouse, is that they say, hey, if you see that somebody's lying to you, you then go back a couple of steps, reiterate the approach that you're using. And you're saying, for instance, with the example that we used before, how am I going to be able to help your friends if you're going to continue to lie to me? And if you're going to continue to not tell me the truth? And then at that point, they usually kind of snap out of it and they're like, okay.
Because so there's kind of a quid pro quo going on here, because you're telling them, or at least you're presenting it as that you have something to offer them too.
Correct.
Yeah.
In many circumstances.
Do you go into it with the mindset that, I guess, you've only got one shot? Because you're talking about, you do a lot of research before, you know, at least in theory, that's what you should do before you start this process. Do you go in with that mindset that you really only have one shot, and if you botch it, that particular individual, informant, detainee, whatever, is kind of, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, dead to you, if you will, once you pass that threshold?
I've been on both ends of that. So I've been in there when I've seen people that I was leading. When I was a team leader, I saw some of these individuals go in and, you know, they botched it. And they, you know, we had to try to kind of fix the situation, if you will. We had to go in and try to fix things and kind of say, hey, look, you know, the person ended up being offended. And we had to go and say, look, obviously a miscommunication. Let's make sure that we can be able to get things going right. There have been other times where other people had screwed up. And so they ended up saying, hey, Reed, we're going to have to do a warm handoff with you or somebody from your team, because we ended up messing up on this. And a lot of times sometimes you can be able to salvage it. In many cases, you can't. It depends on the person that you're dealing with. In many customs of other cultures, yeah, like if you end up like offending them, it's probably over. But in other cases, you can be able to try to salvage it, but it's trying to build that rapport back up. It's difficult.
So you're studying culture, you're studying their, maybe some of their first degree connections, if you will, some of their relationships, mm-hmm, trying to, I guess, educate yourself on the overall situation as much as possible so that there's no surprises, I guess, when you start the interrogation process.
Well, and there's always going to be, you know, some surprises that you might run into or something that you didn't know. And so the first thing that they tell you, like they say, like, hey, if you don't know about a certain custom, or if you are unfamiliar, if you find yourself getting into territory that you're not familiar with, you need to make sure that you are weaving your conversation back out of that. Because if you start getting into there, they will absolutely start to realize either one, they're going to not trust you, or they're going to get to a point where they're just going to be like, hey, I'm just going to shut up and I'm not going to do that. You're going to start getting their short, concise answers, and you're going to realize, okay, I absolutely botched this up.
I would liken it to a football game, for instance, where you go in with a game plan like everybody does, and then you play the first quarter and then you make adjustments based upon that. So you might have, here's plan A, B, C, and you're going through your checks, mm-hmm, I guess,
yeah,
depending upon the feedback that you're getting from this detainee. Sometimes you hear it like in boxing, they say, everybody's got a plan to get punched in the face, right?
That's right. And that's where you get, where it separates a lot of really great interrogators from just mediocre interrogators, where you have to be quick on your feet. You have to be able to think critically. And, you know, sometimes you're able to do well. And even the greatest ones, you know, make a little bit of a mistake or make a misstep. But the crazy part is that most of those personas that we deal with, they are very, very similar in nature, in that, you know, I usually use the example of, every personality that you deal with is kind of fits into some sort of a bucket, right? And so you get some people that are, you know, and we do it too. Like we talk about our jocks, we talk about our nerds, we talk about all of these different things. And there's buckets that we put people into. And the reason that we do this is that we've seen it so many times that we can say, okay, I know that if I approach them in this way, this is going to be, I can get the possible result, right? I'm going to get this result if I approach it in this way. Sometimes you're going to get surprised and you're going to be wrong. And it's up to you to utilize your previous experience and to be able to pivot and move. And, you know, if you need to, apologize. But in many cases, especially as you are in a collector capacity, you don't apologize.
Anything ever go horribly wrong?
Not that I can convey here, but yeah. there have been other times where I've seen things not necessarily go horribly wrong, but they've, you know, a time of resources, you know, use of resources of personnel and everything else felt a little bit wasted. Nobody that died, but you know, you walk away and then people have had to answer for a lot of those, turn around and kind of go stand in front of, you know, higher echelon leaders and be able to say, hey, I messed up and this is what happened. This is where it went. And this is why this is going on.
I guess before we transition into the topic of, you know, social engineering being used for nefarious purposes, mm-hmm. How can some of these techniques, you know, you talk about sales, of course, it comes in handy, building good rapport, relationships, social IQ, mm-hmm. That could be part of it. What are some things that people can leverage in this, from this particular field that you were in, that would be a positive benefit on whether it's one's career or their life, whatever it might be?
So if I'm understanding correctly, you want to ask about like what can people be able to currently leverage in their current persona and be able to utilize that?
Yeah, I guess it's because a lot of what it sounds like you're talking about, it's like it's really having good social IQ, being mm-hmm. being aware of. I guess, you know, one example is when I started my career in marketing, I remember having difficulty a lot of times working with people in different functions mm-hmm. who, you know, maybe they were, their personalities were a little rough, mm-hmm. but I had to figure out on my own that a lot of what was driving the conflict was individuals would have their own worldview or their own view of their corporate situation. And right. maybe they had insecurities. Maybe they felt like people were coming after them, or maybe I wasn't completely on board with their goals. And I had to learn to speak in their language, like you say, mm-hmm. say, hey, I'm here to help you. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to work with you so that I can get the information I need to go do my job so that we can both succeed.
Right.
And then things got better. Right. Then I didn't have those kinds of conflicts anymore, but I had to adapt because I realized that not everybody's the same.
Well, and I think one of the things you're talking about is being able to kind of stop and, you know, because one of the reasons why we get into these scenarios is because we often get our emotions kind of wrapped up into it. And in social engineering, it's the same thing, is that a lot of people take advantage of the emotional tying, if you will, like they feel like they're in this like really, really deep. And a lot of these, you know, a lot of these social engineers end up using this for, like you said, nefarious purposes. But one of the things that we could probably leverage is the ability that we need to be able to stop. And if something doesn't make sense based on our current situation, then we need to stop and question what that is. A lot of times this can, you know, this can resolve by, you know, we may have even seen it, you know, a couple of times in our own experiences. I know that I've seen it at my previous work, where what would happen is that people would come in very hot in a meeting, very upset. And what the leader would do is that they would stop and they would say, well, let's start off asking the question. Let's analyze what actually was supposed to happen on both sides of the party. And they almost acted like the mediator to be able to do that. And a lot of times it's hard to do because in your own head, when you're dealing with a social engineer, you have to say to yourself, you have to be that mediator to say, okay, this person who is contacting me, this doesn't make any sense when I'm basing it off of my current scenario. This isn't a normal standard operating procedure. What is actually going on? So that's what I would say, is that allow yourself to reset, allow yourself to pause and to stop and to be able to say, you know what, let's reset for a second. Take a breath. And then go in and actually with a clear mind for a moment. That's what I would say. Don't be afraid to stop and question what is happening. Because, you know, a lot of times if emotions are high, we often want to just run right into it and be like, oh, you know what? You're right. You know, have we ever gotten into that scenario where we get caught up in groupthink? And then you take a look back at that and you're like, holy cow, why did I ever think like that? Well, it's because everybody else was, and we got caught up in the emotions and everybody wanted to go out and do that. And it just goes too far, you know, in certain circumstances. That's why it's incredibly important to sit back and to think and ask questions.
Hmm. Yeah, there was a book, I think back in grad school, we were studying in marketing, and it's something like the 101 ways to get people to say yes. So this one was all about just building good rapport in general, whether mm-hmm. it's your career, your social life. And I remember some of the highlights. You know, one of them was appeal to people's expertise. So I come to you and I say, Reed, I got this question. I value your opinion on this particular area because you're an expert. Could you help me, you know, make sense of this area and navigate through it? And that was one way, right? You start mm-hmm. kind of bridging the gap between two people. Another one was simply to, you know, sit down and listen to somebody if they had something to talk about, and you just show that you're a good listener. I mean, there's all these tactics that they seem on the surface pretty subtle, but, you know, people are very sensitive to those things too.
I had a very interesting scenario where what we would do is that every time that we would conduct what we call a key leader engagement when we were deployed, we would have to make sure that we talk to everybody and to say, okay, when we're conducting a key leader engagement, there is this technique that is called pride and ego up. So when you're dealing with a person that is older than you, that believes that it doesn't matter or not, if they're older than you, in many cases, especially when you're deployed in the Middle East, those people that are older than you, you always give them that utmost respect. They're considered to be the smartest person in the room, especially when they're given an assignment or like a station of a leader. So you never want to offend that person, because if you do, the minute that you walk out, they will use all of their power to push everybody else away from you if you offend them. And so we oftentimes, when we were getting ready to go out on these little, you know, these little operations or things like that, we would sit down with the leadership of the unit that we were going out with, and we would say, hey, are you familiar with this term? Have you heard of this before? Many of them had said, yep, dealt with this. They had been deployed multiple times. They were fully aware of this. Hey, we don't want to be offensive. We want to make sure that we are putting them in a position of essentially authority, right? And that pride and ego up is where you get a lot of people that are older than you and that may be more intelligent than you. You put them in a position where they can be able to educate the entire situation, because at that point, that is the way to get them to talk. That is the way for them to be able to offer up a lot of information. If you say to them, hey, you know, in your scenario, like if you were to come to me and say, Reed, I want to talk to you about your experience about this thing in sales. Well, I loved not only to hear myself talk, but because I'm a dirty salesperson, but because I love to be able to talk about interaction in general and being able to navigate personalities. And so in that way, you could be able to get an individual to talk. So when you say, hey, for instance, this area that we are in, we would love to hear your opinion, elder of this area that we're in. We would love to be able to hear about what you want us to be able to help you with. What are going to be some of those things? And now, when I was deployed, I was there when, you know, they were switching from one campaign to another, where it was very much a, you know, we were targeting different insurgent groups and terrorist organizations and things like that. And then we had automatically changed to a different campaign altogether, where now we were supporting the local local government and the local the local organizations, you know, those government organizations, to be able to help them get ready to kind of take over the area. And so at that point, what we had to do is that we had to be able to say, okay, we've got to switch our mindset to be able to let them now take over and allow us to be able to help them. And that meant that we had to change a lot of minds in the, you know, with the military leaders that I was working with, because all of them, they just want to go in and take charge. And we had to be able to give our influence, right? And say, hey, allow us to be, you know, it might be a good idea to be able to allow them to be able to talk. And we would have a good, you know, after we got done, we talk about it, say like, hey, how do you think things went? And most of the people that I worked with, they had a really good idea of when they started to see things maybe dissolve a little bit. And they were able to, I saw very good leaders be able to pivot and change their approach and be able to build that back up.
In dangerous professions, obviously military is one. I hear a lot of times in aviation for pilots, driving as well, you hear this term situational awareness. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking about that as I hear you explain some of the work that you've done, that as I'm thinking about how to apply some of those techniques in our everyday lives, I think that is just a good takeaway in general is like when you're interacting with other people, you really do have to you have to dial up the sensitivity a little bit. So you're kind of paying more attention to the feedback, because you hear a lot of times most of the communication between two people is not just that direct verbal communication. It's the intonation, the tone of the voice, the body language, all these other things that you're looking for
100%.
When you interrogate somebody. And maybe if we all kind of paid more attention to those little cues, maybe that would kind of prevent some of the conflict, I think, that we run into a lot of times.
And are you talking about in our interactions when there's like a, when there's a player trying to gather information from me, or trying to gather information in general? Or like, are you just talking about like, hey, in general, we need to probably like do a little bit better at the EQ type thing?
Yeah, I think, yeah, just in general for people who are thinking, okay, well, you know, taking that, some of that that you've learned in the military, and how can I apply this in my career and in my social life? And how can I just have better relationships in general? And maybe sometimes I'm too callous about how I communicate, and I just have to, again, remember everybody's different. Everybody, some people are more sensitive. Some people are, you know, they don't care.
Yeah.
And just have that, like you said, that stronger social IQ or EQ.
Well, and I think that comes with being able to insert yourself into society a little bit more. Because I think, you know, I'm from where, you know, where I'm from a small town, a very small town in Wyoming. And, you know, you go back and, you know, I talk to some of my friends and everything else, and they, you know, many of them don't even have social media accounts. They, you know, they absolutely won't, you know, they don't get onto YouTube. They don't get onto Instagram. They don't do anything, definitely not Twitter. Right. And so they will, and I mean, that's where we kind of teach a lot of our culture. Like if you were to sit down and talk to some of, you know, some of these younger folks that are just barely graduating from high school, and if you didn't have a good understanding of the culture that they're dealing with right there, you wouldn't even understand even some of the terms that they use, right? I have found that I have to be able to take an opportunity and, you know, in small sips, right? I don't absolutely drink everything in from what is currently going on, you know, within our own culture, but you absolutely have to make sure that if you want to be able to understand and better communicate with people, you have to do a little bit of like understanding what people are dealing with, and you have to kind of dip your toes into the culture a little bit. Otherwise, you're going to sound close-minded, and you're going to, I don't want to say ignorant, but you're definitely going to come off as, well, I don't think that you have a fully, like that you're fully aware of the situation that you're in, like you said. And that situation awareness continues to kind of dissolve around you, and you're not really understanding how you should be dealing with people in general. But that's where I have, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not really big on like my own social media or anything like that. I would definitely not say that. But at a minimum, I try to make sure that I understand like how people are communicating, and realize that no one is above reproach. Meaning that if there's a way that you can be able to improve, and if you're not consistently improving the way that you communicate with others, and that consists of, you know, being able to read, being able to listen to podcasts, being able to get involved in the news and understand some of these big ideas that are happening in the world around you, if you're not willing to do that, then you are just going to be that person that is off the grid all the time and not really knowing what's going on in the world around you. Because those are people that I know, like I know a lot of those individuals that will straight up, like they get done with the military and they bounce, they go buy some land out in the middle of nowhere and they go off grid. And I'm kind of like, hey, good on you. I need to go to my 7-Eleven. I need to get my big gulp. That's okay. But you know, and that's all right too. Like let them do that. But if you want to be able to become a better communicator, and especially some of those individuals that I have seen that have been taken advantage of in those scams and in those phishing emails, I mean, it's because they just don't know that it's around. They don't know that it's there. And so education of yourself is key.
And that's a good transition. So as we start talking about how the bad actors use social engineering to extract information from you, and that can happen to us as individuals.
100%.
It could happen to us in the capacity of working on behalf of a company. Is maybe one of your pieces of advice, would it be to have a good, healthy sense of skepticism, I suppose? Maybe not be completely trusting all the time without becoming jaded, I guess.
Right. Well, I mean, we call those, you know, in the military, we call those folks salty, right? You don't want to be salty. And I mean, if anybody, you know, if you've ever been raised around cowboys or anything like that, you see some of those individuals. A good example would be Kevin Costner's, like, John Dutton, his character in Yellowstone. That is a salty cowboy, somebody that is consistently full of skepticism, doesn't trust anybody else, you know, and that's not the way that you want to be. Obviously what you have to do is that you have to be a critical thinker, in that you have to be able to understand that just because you have somebody who's calling you up on the phone and is just insisting that you have to take care of this right now, does not mean that you have to take care of it right now. Absolutely does not. Because you can get off the phone and you can go and you can take a look. I've gotten those phone calls from the IRS, you know, and I had somebody, you know, give me a call. It was a few years ago where they reached out and they said, "Hey, this is who this is, and we need to be able to talk right now." And I said, and they said, "Don't hang up the phone." And I said, and I honestly was like, "You're not going to tell me what to do. So thanks." And then, cause I didn't recognize the number or anything else. And so I just turned it off. And then I immediately went online and started researching, like, you know, with the IRS, and tried to get into my account. And immediately it popped up saying, "Hey, you might be getting these calls."
Wow.
Maybe that's just me being a little bit difficult and just like, "Hey, I'm not going to let somebody tell me what to do. You know, I'm a grown man." Nobody's going to tell me, like, I can't hang up my phone.
I've talked a lot about dating app experiences, you know, having my share of experiences on that, in that realm. And there are surprisingly a ton of catfishers.
Mm.
But you, over time, the more you do it, you start to see the signs pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like you don't know for sure. It's like you can't just go report them to the platform. They're probably not going to do anything. But my spidey sense or my radar is like, yeah, okay, I've seen this before. I know where this is going.
Right.
And I guess some of that is just through training, right? It's just the more you do it, the more you notice.
I think you're right. I mean, and that's one of the things that we get a lot of. You know, I did that in the military beforehand, and every tech company you go into now, it's required training. You have to go through these phishing scams, and these are the things that you look for, and this is what's going on. And say that, like you said, like, education is kind of key, but I really don't think we know how much is actually out there. I think it is so prevalent right now that because it is so easy to get a lot of that information. You take a look at, for instance, you know, you get on any one of these sites, and you know, you have to put in like all of your information in order just to be able to order food nowadays. Like, why, you know, like, you don't need a whole bunch of information just to be able to go and sign up for a sweepstakes, or, you know, because there's some people that go out there and say, "Hey, I follow this group on, you know, on Instagram and everything else, and they're offering this really great opportunity. I could go out there, I could win a Velociraptor. I'm going to do that. It's going to be great. And I'm going to win. I feel really great about this." And the fact is that they're taking that information and they're using that to market to you. And they will most likely take that information and be able to push it to somebody else. And at that point, you don't know whether or not they're going to get breached. You don't know what they're going to be doing with that. So anybody at that point can take your information, kind of move on. And it's so, so prevalent out there, which is one of the reasons why I really kind of fell in love with being able to come and work here.
I suppose you can identify with this too, being in sales. As a marketer, I'm on LinkedIn multiple times a day. And at this point, there's probably not a day that goes by that I don't get one of those typical invitations to connect where I usually accept every one of them, even though I know that they're catfishers or scammers.
Yeah.
Because I just want to see where it goes.
Oh, dude.
I want to see what the end game is, right?
That's pretty funny. Because very few people would do that. I know of a few that would, because it is just like, "Hey, I just want to see what are they going to offer, right? Are they going to offer me a job?" Because I've seen that before, where there's been a few individuals that, you know, work, because we talk about this quite a bit in the intelligence community, when people are getting ready to retire, they don't have a plan, their retirement's not going to be working out for them. And all of a sudden they're like, "Hey, I've got this really great job opportunity that's going to be happening in Sweden, and it's going to be so good, you know," and you're just like, "I would look into that company, homie. I don't think I've seen you work, and I know that you're not that good. So Yeah, I'd be very careful about that. There's been a couple of times that once or twice where I did have somebody who reached out to me on LinkedIn. And, you know, you take a look and they're trying their best, Rich, right? They're trying their best. They're putting together like a LinkedIn profile and they've got all of this information. You know, you think like, okay, cool. They've got other information. They've got like what it looks like, a realistic type picture, professional and whatnot. And then you see like it's all of their job descriptions are like one line and they're, you know, I've had a couple that have been, you know, like there was one that was very obviously a young woman. She was blonde. She was scantily clothed and she was taking a picture kind of like from the top down and the name was Abdullah. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm probably going to say no to that. I'm probably going to deny that one.
And has only five connections.
And that's it. And five connections. Yeah. And that's all. And so I, you know, and that was a true story. That one was.
Yeah.
So that was pretty crazy. I'm like, yeah, probably not. And there's been a couple other times where I've gotten some that looked a little bit better. But again, it was, you know, no mutual connections to me, a total of like, less than 100 connections. But yet they've been in the business for the past like 10 years. And you're thinking, I don't, no, I don't think so.
It's getting bad on LinkedIn. I don't know why, but a lot of that activity has moved over to that platform. Facebook, of course, has been bad for a while.
Yep.
But they, you know, they move to new areas. They keep going.
Well, I think it's a matter of you know, the culture as well right now, because there are a lot of people who are losing their jobs and, you know, anybody's looking for a new position or something like that, or they want to be able to make a little bit more money because inflation's going up or whatever. And so they'll be looking for those really good opportunities. And if I can connect with more people, that might be the way. But the bad actors, as you stated, they're going to be looking for more ways to extort. And this is going to be one of the ways that they may do that.
Yeah. And there's so much information about you on LinkedIn, depending on how you manage your profile. And that can be used definitely for bad purposes. I find myself, especially after working in a privacy themed oriented company, sometimes even outthinking myself. Like I'll see communications through text or through email, and I'm just convinced that this is a catfish, but it's actually legit communications from my bank, my credit card company, whatever it might be.
Interesting.
And it's so and Sarah's talked a little bit about this too on past episodes, but it's tough to find that balance. It's like how do I be cautiously skeptical without being completely jaded to the point where I don't trust anything?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you, because there's been a couple of times where I've just, you know, you kind of lose faith in humanity just a little bit, where you're like, you know, that's it. I'm buying a farm. I'm getting out of here. I'm so done with this. What's the world coming to? But again, the fact is that I heard somebody say once is that there's always going to be bad people in the world, right? And so if you're removing yourself from that world, you're just making more room for those bad actors, right? And so you might as well devote yourself to something, you know, even if you don't like take a broad stance. Like for instance, like the company that we work for, right? You may not want to do something like that. You may just want to be able to continue to be there. But I would say, you know, don't be afraid to be part of your community and make sure that people know you and know your stance and just continue to know what's going on in the community so that you can be able to continue to improve things.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of this just is common sense being just kind of staying alert.
Yeah,
you know, when you're
100%
doing your day-to-day activities, whether it's personal or professional, just maybe sometimes ask another opinion. Maybe if you're at work, ask a colleague and take a second look at this. Maybe it's your supervisor. Maybe it's somebody in head of security, whatever. But just be cautious, because I've worked in companies in the past where it just takes one person who clicked on the phishing link, or they clicked on a link or an attachment that had a virus, and it did a lot of damage.
Oh, yeah.
For a period of time.
Oh yeah, I mean you take a look at the whole SolarWinds thing that happened, you know, within the United States government and all the stuff that went from there, and they were supposed to be like, hey, they were supposed to be the ones that were able to protect us. Like, what's going on here? And yeah, it's a matter of being able to, again, take a pause, you know, realize that, hey, this doesn't make sense. And I know it doesn't make sense. And just don't forget to do those small things. It's, you know, it's all a matter of like, hey, put your cursor over the name, for crying out loud. Does it match up? If it doesn't, hey, you know, right there. Okay, cool. Send it to spam, or send it to, you know, report for phishing, all of those things. It matters.
As we, as we wrap this up, are there any takeaways that maybe you might want to share with people, whether they're on the corporate side or in their personal lives, to be a little bit more careful, I guess, to avoid? Because it's getting worse, I can tell. Yeah. Several platforms digitally, it's getting worse. And like I said, I'm trying not to become jaded.
Right, of course. Yeah.
But I can't ignore it.
Well, and it's one of those things. I mean, you take a look at some of the, there was a report that I was reading earlier this year that was released saying, I mean, we've got millions of people that are currently out there trying to find a solution. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, MySudo existed back in 2014. They put it together so that people, regular citizens, could turn around and say like, hey, you don't have to be part of that. You can still be able to protect yourself. And, and you've got all types that want to be able to protect themselves. But many of those individuals that aren't in the same space that we're in, they're not fully aware. They know that something's out there, that they need to be able to protect themselves, that they need to be able to do more to protect their PII. But honestly, they feel a little bit trapped. And that's, I think, one of the great reasons why I continue to work here and why I wanted to work here in the first place, was because what we offer is that we can be able to offer that means for companies to be able to protect their people. And so when you see those data breaches that are coming up in the media and whatnot, we got an offer to be able to, we can offer this as a protective piece to be able to give this to your consumers, to the people that work with your company every single day. Corporate leaders, in my opinion, it's not like you're going to be creating something for free, right? There are means to be able to offer this up as an additional product for their company and be able to help them out. And Anonymy Labs is one of those ways to do that. But that's what I would say, is that don't be afraid to, for one, educate yourself. Don't be afraid to stop and say, hey, is there a better way to be able to interact in the world that I'm in? And take advantage of some of these products that are out there. And as far as like leaders are concerned, especially corporate leaders, absolutely. There's ways that you can be able to take this data privacy, protect your people, offer up something good, and still at the same time, you're not going to be, you're not breaking the bank to try to do it either. Corporate leaders can do that, and we can help. So,
yeah. And that was definitely the purpose of creating this podcast too, is just trying to close that knowledge gap, because we say a lot of times that if you don't understand the problem, you're not going to search for a solution.
Right? Yes.
Classic. I mean, it's like, of course, right? It's common sense, but I think a lot of people just don't truly appreciate what their risk exposure is, mm-hmm. especially on the personal level, those who are just living their day-to-day lives outside the corporate environment. I think back to, because it's not, a lot of times people just think, oh, the people that are getting targeted for these scams are oftentimes retirees, right? They're easily... they easily fall for these types of scams. But I remember we covered a story several episodes ago. I think it was a professional rugby player, mm-hmm. in Australia, I believe it was. And he was like one of the top, I don't know how it works down there. I guess they do drafts down there just like we do in the NFL. But mm-hmm. he was one of the top players in the league. And he fell for one of these phishing attacks where he continued to transfer money to the maximum level he could on a daily basis until his account was completely exhausted. He lost all of his savings.
Goodness.
Just because somebody told him that your money is really not secure right now, but we're going to move it to a more secure account. And so, right. He was like in his mid-20s, early 20s, something like that. So yeah. anybody can be a target of this.
Yeah. And the other thing is, that's somebody that's being proactive in that approach. I remember when the OPM breach happened. Do you remember that happened back in like 2015, 2016? There was a massive there was an OPM breach that occurred, and they contacted a whole bunch of people within the United States government, inside the DOD, and said, hey, this happened. Sorry. And we're like, oh, okay, well, great. And what they were able to offer is that they offered like, hey, we'll offer this, credit monitoring or everything else. But that's more what we talked about. That's reactive, right? And what needs to happen is that there needs to be something that's more proactive, and being being part of this movement and, you know, part of this process and being here, you know, with this company and what we've learned so far, what I've learned so far has just been proactive is really not as hard as you think. It is very, very easy to be able to just take a couple extra steps and be able to have that proactive measure. So you're being preventative in nature and not reactive.
Well, Reed, this has been a good one.
Oh man, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much, Rich.
I hope we get to do something like this again in the future. I'm sure you got a lot of good stories to tell.
Oh man, we can absolutely go into other things.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for your time. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. In our next episode, we'll be speaking to someone who's leading the way in helping companies quickly go to market with advanced privacy solutions. And one of those offerings is decentralized identity, a technology many feel is not only the future of identity protection, but the next business frontier. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.